And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Fancast to finish up the week. This is the first week with three of these glorious podcasts for the VIPs. And Tom, do we have a show? Oh my goodness, do we have a show? We are recording this moments after Jim Benning finally met the media via Zoom. We've talked about this for the last couple of pods. It arrived here on a Friday, the day after the Vancouver Canucks defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs 3-1. But the game is not the story. It was the 35 minutes or so that the GM took questions, and full credit to him. I mean, we talked about this too, right? Like, he had no other choice. It's been since training camp, since we've heard from Jim Benning. So he sat in there, he answered the questions. That was the good news. I think from a Canucks perspective, though, and probably from a fan's perspective too, I don't know that we're any further ahead in terms of the plan that he referred to an awful lot throughout that address.
Yeah. Well, look, winning is not a passive activity, right? Like, winning in the NHL is not a passive activity. It's something you go out. We've seen it with the Maple Leafs in town. Like, what can be accomplished by a team with a plan that pursues it proactively and that is disciplined within that? And, I mean, quote after quote was just like, you know, the response, for example, I was trying. So I asked Jim about the Kuzma quote. Right. We ran out of time. And, you know, that's a glass jaw moment for this general manager, I think. Like, a glass jaw, and what I mean by that is a punch you can't take. Like, a punch you can't take in this marketplace. There were valid concerns, even this offseason, like, even before things went off the rails, about Jim Benning's ability, excuse me, to take this core group that, in fairness, he's constructed, right? And support it, put the puzzle together in a way that can put them over the top, that can put them into durable, reliable, year-after-year contention. Not just a one-off run in the playoffs behind a hot goaltender, but durable, every year, one of the best teams in hockey-type contention. And the "we ran out of time" quote suggested that this guy might not be the one to do it. Like, this guy probably is not the guy who can put this team over the top. You know, I don't think that was a surprise to some people, but it was a quote that made it kind of beyond debate. Like, it was a tough quote and a tough look for the GM of this team to say, especially considering, like, his best players remain on entry-level deals. So today, I asked him about that comment, and then I tried to tie it to another comment that he'd made earlier on in the availability, which is that, you know, we're kind of taking, like, we live in we take things day to day. We live in a day to, like, today's world now, and the deadline is 5 weeks away, and we'll deal with that when it comes. And it's just like, man, like, there are 10 to 14 day quarantines. There are 16 teams in LTI. There is no money or space in the system. Like, this is going to be a complicated deadline to navigate, and this team has massive, massive issues facing it. It's going to require something more proactive, and his response kind of, like, honestly almost stopped me in my tracks a little bit. You know, it was like, it was something like, you know, like, if something comes our way, we'll look to do it.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
Or I expect we're going to get some calls on our players and we'll just see where it goes. And it's just like, winning is not a passive activity in a salary cap league. Like, winning doesn't just happen to you. You know what does kind of just happen to you, though? You can assemble a good core with a passive approach, because this system rewards failure through the draft. Like, that's what the draft's designed to do. And they've mined some good value out of the top of the draft. They've also had some whiffs, but at the top of the draft, they've obviously landed some really good players, some really exciting players. That's good news. But putting the puzzle pieces together around them, like, that's the task for this organization. I don't think there was a single moment in anything that Jim Benning said today that would suggest or give anyone who cares about the fate of this franchise any sense of confidence that this is the guy who can do that.
Right. And for me, it was so predictable right off the hop. It was the schedule. We've heard that. You know, we haven't heard from Jim since training camp, but really the first words out of his mouth were the schedule. That was, you know, and look, the schedule was hard early on. They played more hockey than everybody else, but they're not where they are because of the schedule. The division, he talked about how the plan last summer was based on the idea they were going to play all the teams in the league and that the goalposts somehow changed on them, but it changed on everybody.
But also, we all knew what was coming. Like, we saw what happened in the NBA. We saw what happened with the Blue Jays. Like, we all knew that there wasn't going to be any way to do cross-competition NHL season. Like, we all knew that. I was talking about that in, you know, early August. Like, we all knew that was coming. We all knew. I do not accept that was a surprise. That is absolute poppycock.
Right, because the suggestion there is that, what, they were going to beat up on San Jose, Los Angeles, and Anaheim and boost the record? Like,
LA's good now. LA's good. They've rebuilt. They don't even have Tyler Madden in the lineup. This team might.
And I had to laugh. I think the entire Canuck Twittersphere had to laugh too when, you know, you asked about the response in the market to the running out of time question. And then there was a follow-up question a few later about why wait until after the deadline to negotiate or start talking about Hughes and Pedersen's contract extensions, to which Jim said, quote, "Well, there's lots of time." And I just, you know, to hear that after all that's been made of the other quote, like, it just, again, I don't know what I expected, but it just, again, this is 7 years now, and to be asking the fan base and the market to be patient and to constantly refer to the young guys who aren't all that young anymore. Like, Bo Horvat's turning 25 next month, right? And Brock Besser just turned 24. Or is Besser,
yeah.
Horvat's turning 26.
Jake Virtanen has played 300 games.
Horvat's turning 26.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You know, all this talk of young guys, and then, like, there were bizarre name drops, too. Like, when he talked about new players and he name-checked Jace Hauerluck, who's played 2 games for the hockey club. Like, that was a bizarre moment. And right,
yes,
off the top, he talked about how he thinks Bo Horvat's played his best hockey, maybe ever, in the last little while here. And you know me, and I'm charting these assists that I expect a centerman, a second-line center in the National Hockey League, to have more than one helper in 16 games. I get the matchup part. And last night, that line was good. They won the matchup. They scored. They beat Matthews and Marner, and they beat the Maple Leafs. But it hasn't happened anywhere close to regular enough. And so, again, I thought that was a strange name check right off the top, too, to suggest that Bo Horvat's playing. Like, Bo Horvat legitimately was a beast in the bubble, right, with the 10 goals last
yes.
year. Like, so to hear the GM suggest now that Bo Horvat's playing his best hockey when I think he has struggled offensively. Again, it was a ton of bizarro moments within that address.
Yeah, and I think the most important point you've made, too, is, like, you know, because Jim said our best young players are 21 to 23, right? And teams in this division are physically mature, he suggested, right? As if, you know, the best teams in this division are leaning on, like, wizened veterans, as opposed to, you know, guys like Kyle Connor, Gaudreau, McDavid, Matthews, Marner, who are like 2 years older, 2-3 years older across the board than some of Vancouver's young players. I mean, I know Calgary has 18-year-old Sam Bennett, and he doesn't age. But aside from that, like, I don't know that you'd look across the North Division and be like, maybe Winnipeg with Dubois, Stastny, Scheifele down the middle. You'd say like, hey, that's a veteran team. But other than that, like, this whole division, like, this whole fucking sport is built around youth at the top end of rosters. Like, that's, again, how this business typically works, especially in a cap system and especially with the way that teams skate now, right? Like, this is a young man's game. And, man, like...
Well, it is, but Tom, like, they're also running four defensemen in their 30s and Nate Schmidt, who's going to turn 30 this summer. So, like, yeah, you've got five of your six defensemen on a nightly basis right now, now that Hamonic's back and healthy. Five of your six defensemen are either 30-plus or within reaching distance of a 30th birthday. And oof. So...
Doesn't that show, huh?
Right, so...
It's a good stat.
So talk about all these young defense, or not just young defensemen, but young, you know, the youth and waiting for guys to develop, and yet the coach is choosing to go with veteran defensemen because clearly he doesn't like the options. Jalen Chatfield's gone underground. They buried him, right? Like, we may never see him in the NHL again. He's still on the roster. And Olli Levy is shuttling between the taxi squad because of the Pettersson injury and they had to activate Mikalas. But Olli Levy hasn't played here for the last couple of games. That's a coach's decision that he's going with guys that he feels give him the best, you know, opportunity to win these hockey games right now. And again, full credit to the Canucks. They were good. The Leafs may be untired, but whatever. For a night, the Canucks rose up. They were good. I thought the Canucks were good against the Maple Leafs, but that's in isolation. They have 10 wins at the 27-game mark. That's not good enough. I didn't hear that out of the general manager. He talked about he was disappointed and did they want more wins? Sure, but I was waiting for that moment throughout 35 minutes of this address to hear, you know, this is unacceptable. This is the team that I've assembled, and it is not good enough. And instead, it's taking it day by day. Farhan asked point blank about getting back into the playoff race. Oh, he's not looking that far. You know, he just wants the process and all that. Like, again, if I'm a fan, absolutely pulling my hair out with almost everything that I heard out of the GM's mouth today.
Well, but isn't that par for the course? Like, that's kind of been 7 years. Like, the first 3 years, and even up until last season, like, well, even last season, if you go read some of the one-on-ones I had with Jim Benning was talking about the empty cupboards that he found when he arrived in terms of the prospect system, right? Like, that's 6 years on, right? This is now fully Jim's. I mean, there's no debating that. And, you know, but there were years spent, like, what blew my mind the other day and going through that piece that we, Harmon and I did, sort of taking stock of Vancouver's trade assets, the trade tiers column this week. Like, the Canucks have 10, and I actually believe it's 11. I think that there's another NTC-NMC, modified NTC anyway, that's not currently listed at cap-friendly. So that's 11 contracts on the Canucks' books with some form of trade protection involved in them. And, like, let's just note that after 5 years talking about how much that hamstrung this administration when they were coming in, that's more than ever existed at any point in the Mike Gillis era. Crazy. Like, that's crazy. Because the Mike Gillis era teams won every year. Like, they made the playoffs every year, except one, and he got canned.
Right.
And it's
also who's got them, right? Like,
oh, Holtby, Erickson, Sutter. Fuck. It's so ugly. And there's no value. There's no team-friendly value there either.
Like, I just want to take I'm glad you brought this up. And you guys wrote about it, and people should check the written part out. But I want to dive into this, and I'm glad you brought this up because, you know, everybody just screams, like, trade Sutter. Or, well, not everybody, because some people are saying resign Sutter. But the people that are saying trade Sutter, you have to recognize Brandon Sutter has a modified no-trade clause. He can submit 15 teams, essentially cut the league in half that he can't be traded to. So if he wants to make life difficult on the Canucks and wants to stay here for the duration of his contract, which expires at the end of this year, but he could easily say to Jim Benning, yeah, the 15 teams, you know, all the good teams, all the playoff teams, the teams that would be loading up on a rental, The teams that aren't going to the playoffs aren't looking to grab a rental player if they know that they could sign him as an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. So Brandon Sutter gets to submit a list. Antoine Roussel and Jay Beagle have modified no trade clauses as well. And then you get to the defenseman. We know about Edler, but I think it's important to note that Travis Hamonic's got a no movement clause. Like, he's not going anywhere. And even if he was, we know that he wants to stay in the West, and so the options would be limited. But it's not as simple as, you know, just trade these pieces. Like, these guys do have some say. They've negotiated some control of their future. Now, can that be worked around? Sure. But I also think that, you know, a guy like Sutter could make it a little more difficult on the Canucks if that's what he wanted to do ultimately. Tanner Pearson is the one guy that has no trade protection. And yet Jim, again, doubled down today. There was the insider trading thing yesterday that came up about, you know, the Canucks want to re-sign him. And Jim said that they're going to try to re-sign Tanner Pearson, and then went on, you know, defended that decision and how much they like Tanner Pearson. And so, you know, we'll see.
Sorry,
we'll
see. We need to unpack the Pearson part just sure. really quickly. And then I have another point that I want to get into, because I thought it was sneakily the most important part of the interview. It's the one that no one's talking about, but I thought it was
let's talk about it, of sneaky importance.
But first with Tanner Pearson, you know, we'll reach out to Resnick, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, just like, it's like fourth and long. It's like fourth and long in contract negotiations, and you punt your leverage right out the building. Right? Like, it's insanity. I couldn't believe that. And that speaks to, again, the bigger concerns about, you know, long-term strategy and overall approach, right? The idea, and like, just say it with me. This needs to be like my motto is like, winning is not a passive activity. Winning is not a passive activity in this industry. The other comment that I could not get over, that I was stunned by, left my mouth agape, was the comment about Jim's relationship with Francesco Aquilini, in which he said, you know, in addition to living day to day in today's world, right? Jim also mentioned that he has day to day contact with Francesco. Like, did that not blow anyone else's mind? Like, we have day to day contact on planning. it's just crazy. Like,
can we get some transcripts?
Yeah, we need to get some transcripts. I'll eat them. but not if Jace Hauerluck plays in the lineup. That Francesco quote was wild. But I have a real good relationship with Francesco. This is per Brendan Batchelor. He's the guy that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. Day-to-day. We had a plan this summer, he says. We have a plan going forward. We update him on that plan constantly. So this plan that everyone in the market hears today and says, that's nuts, not good enough, wild, unaccountable. This plan is updated to Canucks ownership on a day-to-day basis, and doesn't that pose some very interesting questions, right? Jim supports Travis, he said, right?
Yep.
I like the job he's doing. We all, I think, know, right? We know if this was a hockey operations decision purely, the coaching staff would have been extended this offseason. That's not a decision being made by Jim. It's a decision being made above him. We know, too, that this club cut 20% of their spend on player personnel, as according to estimates at capfriendly.com. It might be more, it might be less. I can't factor in the minor league money, etc. But part of that is not having their minor league team operate in Canada the way the Calgary Flames are. That's put Mikey DiPietro in a tough situation, the question that you asked Jim about, and which I'm sure we'll get to. But, like, the reason that it matters that we note that Jim faced the music today, that Jim hung in there and took some tough questions, and the reason that that matters is that he's interacting day-to-day with someone rubber-stamping this plan, right? Day-to-day communication with the owner, not quarterly reports, not progress reports, not discussions about a budget at year's end that then the GM operates within. Day-to-day contact is what Jim said today. Day-to-day! We only hear from that guy with Twitter threads. Like, occasionally he celebrates a win. Occasionally he says it's like a playoff-like atmosphere on Twitter. That's it. That's all we get from the guy, the only guy in this city right now who seems to have, you know, hear this plan, see this plan, understand that this is a club that's, you know, intent on taking a passive approach to winning, and rubber stamps that and says, sure, okay. We never get to hear from him. He never faces the music. He never answers a question. Never does an interview.
Nope. No.
I mean, if you want to understand why it matters that Jim Benning faces the music, just think about the man behind him who's okayed this, who's really responsible for what we're seeing this season, and who's really responsible for the good people in this organization. There are good people in this organization, but to a man, whether it's Nils Höglander playing a matchup role, whether it's Green and his staff having to make short-term decisions instead of focusing on the long-term, despite the team being out of the playoffs because they have to concern themselves with their next job on expiring contracts. Honestly, even whether it's Jim Benning, who's sort of wearing a lot of mistakes, and granted, a lot of the mistakes are his, but who's still also wearing, you know, the failures of a team that cut a fifth of their player personnel budget and can't sort of point to that or be honest about it in how he addresses what's happened to this club. All of these people are being put in uncomfortable or bad positions or positions to fail. And we never get to ask or hear from the person putting them in those spots. Just seems a little twisted. And that's, I think, a problem. Like, I do think that's a problem. And I do think all eyes following that press, you can't listen to that presser. You can't hear what Jim had said and say, this is going well, and I have confidence in the direction here. Like, you cannot do it. No one has done that. Even Caleb, I think, is criticizing them on Twitter. And that puts the focus on ownership and what they're going to do here, right?
And I have said repeatedly, Tom, like, again, I don't need Francesco Aquilini to be front and center day in, day out. Like, he's not Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. I get that, and I don't need that. But in this market, with what the Canucks mean to this city and beyond, and when you think of the millions of dollars that Canuck fans have lined the pockets of Francesco and his family, like, I feel strongly a couple of times a year. And even if he doesn't like public speaking, that's too bad. Like, find ways to get better at it. And I saw him when the draft was here in, what was it, 2019. And the morning of the draft, he had a business person's breakfast with the commish. And Murph
right.
moderated it. And he was fine. Like, he answered questions and he was fine. He can do it. I think he hides behind this notion that he doesn't like to do public speaking. But again, a couple of times a year, I think we talk about Travis has to do it every day, twice a day on game days. Finally, we hear from the general manager. But I do think, and then that was a good pull of you to catch that part, that if in fact the owner is there on a daily basis, then yes, we need to hear from the owner of the Vancouver Canucks more than a 6 Twitter thread and leave it at that. The other thing, too, is
day-to-day. He's my day-to-day contact. That's mind-blowing.
It is. And so I'm glad you got that. That was a good catch. That slipped past me. But I go back to last fall then in free agency. And, like, again, I assume there was a plan. But I know full well that the plan was not to let every single free agent walk out the door. So the plan that they had in place, blew up on them. Right?
I know.
So I have trouble when I hear we've got a plan, we've built a plan, you know, then the goalposts changed. Like, you should be building for a competitive team now and moving forward, and it shouldn't matter what division you're in or who your opponents are. And when you see what happened and the folly of last year's free agent period, to hear that there's a plan, again, this is 7 years of hearing about a plan. And that plan has yielded nothing. Like, Rob Williams had that tweet the other night that, you know, the bottom four teams in point percentage this year are the same bottom four for the last four seasons in totality. And the Canucks are a part of that. Which is crazy talk. But it's not, like, I mean, we knew that. But again, when you see it laid out in front of you, it just drives home this point that with Pettersson and Hughes on entry-level deals and all this young talent that we keep hearing about, nothing has changed. And, you know, again, you got your two questions and like, I would have loved to have had another one where I could have asked, because we heard so much from the GM about the young players, but he never talks about, you know, the bloated contracts that are standing in the way. I mean, he was finally sort of held to the fire on the Louis deal and admitted that, yeah, you know, every team's got bad contracts and you wish you had ones that you did over. But again, like, you know, Jay Beagle's name never comes up. Antoine Roussel's name never comes up. We just hear about the young players. But we also know at the same time that this is a management group that loves to surround these young players and insulate them with the character guys and the experienced guys. And that's kind of why we are where we are in all of this, is that, you know, there's just way too many inefficient contracts, but there was no mention of that. There was no ownership of that. It's just better days are ahead. But, you know, the question is, are they? Are they, if this group is the group that is steering the ship?
Okay, there's a lot that I want to touch on. First off, I want to touch on a ridiculous argument that we've seen on occasion. We saw it early in the season with Nils Höglander when he was playing really well. And people were like, look, this was the plan with Toffoli. Like, they were happy to let him leave because they knew this was coming. And now we're seeing it with Demko. Like, the Canucks were right not to sign Markstrom to that contract. Like, that contract with Calgary is crazy. Look at how much better Demko is. Oh my goodness. And it's just like, let's make no bones about this. You know, most of the offseason until about the final week, Toffoli and Markstrom were the Canucks' twin priorities. They're twin priorities. It was late in the process that Tanev sort of edged past Toffoli, and by that point, I think they'd already alienated him, Jim Benning commenting that he didn't agree with the idea that communication was an issue.
Right, there was some pushback there.
Yeah, a little bit hard to stomach. And finally, you know, like, the problem is it wasn't Markstrom or Demko. I know everyone keeps thinking about this. Like, it's Markstrom or Demko. It's not. Or at least it didn't have to be yet. It could have been Markstrom and Demko, and that means when you make the decision, you also have the asset that you get from trading a really valuable fucking goaltender, right? It didn't have to be Höglander's good, you know, too bad about Toffoli. Doesn't matter. We had a plan. It could have been Toffoli and then Höglander driving things on a bottom six line that now begins to look pretty fucking good, right? Like a Höglander, Gaudette, whatever line, like Sutter line. We've seen that this week, or it's looked really good. Like, that line's actually played pretty well. That could have been what you had with also Toffoli on in your top six. Like, fuck. But the point is this wasn't some calculated plan. This came about, you know, because the club ran out of time, as Jim Benning said it, but realistically it's more that they ran out of space. And in addressing the Louis Erickson contract, one other Jim Benning poll that I want to focus on is every team has bad contracts. And that's true. Teams make mistakes. You're kind of judged in part. Like, this is what the Tampa Bay Lightning's superpower is. If you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning's draft history, like, they might as well light every first-round pick they've made since they hired Steve Yzerman over a decade ago on fire, right? Like, Anthony DeAngelo, Slater Cuckoo, Brett Connolly. Like, you know, it's a bunch of like, useful depth guys. And Andrei Vasilevsky. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a ton of shit. Like, a ton of shit. The Cal Foot. Did they also draft the other foot? Like, oh my God. Like, it's one miss after another. Some of them catastrophic, but they keep cutting bait at the right time. Like, Slater Cuckoo becomes Jan Ruda and then another draft pick. You know, Anthony DeAngelo gets traded for a second round pick well before it becomes apparent to the industry that he's, you know, persona non grata. And on down the list. Like, they always monetize. They always cut bait. They solve their problems better than anyone. Mark Strait, Braden Coburn, on and on. Like, it's unbelievable how quickly, and you know what? You know what's unbelievable? It's unbelievable how honest they are with themselves and how honest they are in evaluating their own team. Like, they know who they have and what they have, and that allows them to move quickly to mine value out of what they have before it loses it. And they don't fall in love with guys because they had a good 10-game stretch. Like, you just fucking know Jake Virtanen, who's played over 300 games for this club now, who, like, they should have cut their losses on this guy years ago. And now he has that good game against the Leafs, and you just fucking know that now they're wondering if actually maybe he's figuring it out and they got to keep him. Like, sometimes it takes power forwards 300 games. You know what I mean? It's just like, you cannot waste this opportunity. Like, you cannot waste the next 5 weeks. You cannot extend Tanner Pearson when, like, you're probably going to be able to find a comparable piece 5 days after the market opens this offseason for $700K. Like, you cannot afford to not find a way to turn Brandon Sutter. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not about Sutter. It's not about Edler. It's not about Pearson. Like, the fact that we're discussing Pearson is absolute checker shit. Chess would be considering dealing Tyler Mott because you're probably not going to be that good next year once you've extended Pedersen, Hughes, and Demko. You still have $28 million on the books plus three and a bit for Luongo. So 31. You basically have more than 30% of your cap space tied up in Myers, Holtby, Eriksson, Roussel, and Beagle. Like, you're not gonna be, yeah. You can't be good. You can't be good with $30 million tied up in those guys in Luongo recapture. Pedersen and Hughes making between 15 and 20, and Demko making 3.5. He could make more if he keeps playing like an above average goaltender over the balance of the season. Like, fuck, man. This is a multi-year plan. And so by the time you're actually really good, Tyler Mott's probably a $3 million player. Like, honestly, he might be your best trade asset. You need to do everything you can. You have to be focused about trying to create a window that opens, honestly, now, 2023. Everything needs to be done in service of maximizing your chance to win and win big. 2023, 2024, 2025. And even then, after 2023... Miller and Horvat are up, and they're going to be fucking expensive. Like, this window is already shrinking rapidly, and if they're going to extend it, like, they need a more active plan than we're going to wait and see who calls us about our players.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I asked Jim, and I said I didn't expect him to negotiate in the media, and I don't, but again, when we go back to what happened last fall and running out of time, you know, these are two of the most important contracts in the history of the Vancouver Canucks, the extensions for Pedersen and Hughes. So I was curious if there had been any discussions whatsoever about a framework. And he said he had talked to Pat Brisson yesterday, I think he said, and then said that they were going to push it past the trade deadline. That I assume that means that he's looking at the trade deadline and evaluating, you know, his moves between now and then as more of a priority. And then once the deadline comes, basically, in his words, he had lots of time to look ahead to Pedersen and Hughes and their extensions. But I guess at the very least, I'm encouraged to hear that there is some sort of dialogue between the two sides. I have no idea, you know, how deep they've gone at this point, but certainly doesn't sound like...
With Pedersen and Hughes?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like things are going to heat up until after the trade deadline.
Correct. And I actually can give you an update on that. I know that they've talked with Brisson, who now represents both, right? So Pat Brisson, CAA, Sidney Crosby's agent, probably the most powerful agent in the sport at this point. I actually don't think you have to say probably. I think he's eclipsed Don Meehan. Pat Brisson now represents both of them. I think there were some preliminary conversations after the change in agents, after Pedersen left to join CAA. But I think those conversations were more like, you know, at the time, Pedersen wasn't playing at his best, right? And I think it was more just like, hey, don't focus on the contract, just perform. Like, it was more about, you know, what can we do to stabilize and make sure that this kid's not feeling pressure, considering how the start of the season's gone. I don't think contract talks are advanced at all. I'm telling you, they're not advanced at all. But the sides do intend to get a little more serious as the season goes along, but... Just like I talked about, right? Just like I talked about with this window, this short window, everything that this club does for the next 5, 6, maybe 8 years is going to be based in part on what these contracts look like. Even your deadline plans, like even your next waiting until after the deadline, like even what you do now, how can you extend Tanner Pearson when you don't have a good sense of what those next deals look like?
Yeah.
You know, like even that blows my mind. And look, the passive approach is going to be to bridge both these guys as opposed to benefiting from the long-term planning and cost certainty that could be gained by taking the Maple Leafs approach. I just think it's the wrong play. I think it's the wrong play, and I especially think it's the wrong play considering how this season has gone. And, you know, just considering the likelihood that these guys, you know, can't possibly be looking around at what they've seen this offseason, at the departures of Markstrom and Tanev and, you know, every single UFA and think like, hey, this is where I want to be. You know, like there's risk in signing bridge deals at this point with both those players. I think they have to go long. They should go long. And to wait until after the deadline to make a single extension or commitment, contractual commitment to a supporting cast player without a good sense of what those deals look like, to me, that's complete nonsense. Like, ass backwards.
And I think, too, the DiPietro question that I asked, you know, I would have loved to have seen some real authority there when I said, like, is there a plan to get him game action at any level this season? Or, you know, what are you running here in terms of a risk of a 21-year-old goaltender who needs to develop? I would have loved to have seen Jim sort of, you know, shoulders back and say, yes, like, we've got a plan, and we're going to enact that plan. Instead, it was like, yeah, he needs to play. You're right. We agree on that. But there doesn't sound like there's any sort of plan there. I see that they've loaned Guillaume Brisebois to Laval in the American Hockey League to keep him on this side of the border, but to get him some game action, you know, call in some favors, whatever the case, but find a way to get Mikey DiPietro some game action, because it just, I can't imagine, like, 18 months between professional starts for this guy if he doesn't play anywhere this year. I don't know. You know, you're working with Ian Clark and that part's good, but still, like, guy's got to play. And Jim agreed with that. So, you know, the longer you go with Demko and Holtby as healthy options here, you got to have somebody on the taxi squad. I get that. But, you know, if the season is being flush, then just send him to Utica at that point and let him play a bunch of games, however many are left for the Utica Comets. Like, I think at some point here, the good of the player has to come first over, you know, this idea of having insurance at the NHL level if the season really doesn't mean anything for the Vancouver Canucks. So I'll be curious to see what they do with Mikey DiPietro here.
I mean, this is a wasted campaign for a 21-year-old goaltender. I've been at Rogers Arena, you know, from before the presser because I wanted to get this podcast in, and then I'll write a column and watch practice. But the, you know, like, I watched him get in work with Ian Clark, and it certainly didn't look like enough to replicate game action. And no, that's a problem because Mike DiPietro had a pretty phenomenal age 20 season. Like, this is not some guy. This is a guy, this is the starting goaltender for Team Canada's U-20 team. Like, this is a third round pick that the organization found. This is a guy who excelled at the American League level as a rookie, like excelled as a bona fide starter, a number one, played back to back, like played a ton, played really well. Like, that's a guy you have to take care of. And man, how many people have been on waivers? How many goalies have been on waivers, right? You don't think Jim Benning with the resources to bring in a third goaltender would have done so? A veteran third goaltender? You don't think he would have claimed Eric Comrie or some shit? Of course he would have. And this is, again, why, to some extent, so many of the decisions being, not the decisions, but so many of the priorities that we're actually seeing reflected in decisions that we criticize Jim Benning for are in fact being made, you know, above his head by someone who we didn't get to hear from today.
But just the idea of a veteran goaltender, and you're right, there have been a ton of them. We've seen a bunch of the same guy go on waivers and get claimed and sort of recycled around the league. But remember, like, this was kicked around in the offseason. Like, hey, maybe they should look at bringing in a veteran guy on a league minimum deal. Tom, they had to wait until opening night to trigger long-term for Furlan so that they could sign Travis Hamonic to $1.25 million. Like, every dollar was allocated. And so the idea of bringing in, I don't think they had the option of bringing in a veteran guy.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I agree with you. So what you're saying is they needed to make more forward-minded choices. And that's probably right, especially with how this season has gone, right? Instead of trying to put a Band-Aid over a defense corps that's still too old, still not nearly good enough. They should have found a veteran goaltender at 700K so that they didn't waste DiPietro's season. I guess that's right. I guess that's a good argument. They did need to allocate, you know, scant resources better, more creatively. But you know what? Jim Benning's a conventional general manager. Maybe a below average, but conventional general manager. And a conventional general manager is going to struggle when you cut 20% of their player personnel budget. You need different type of thinking. You need a more proactive type of thinking if you're going to sustain a decent level of performance with that type of year-over-year cut. Clearly, the Canucks haven't. And, you know, you're right. I shouldn't be sparing Jim Benning for criticism from how he's allocated his budget. But I do think it's worth pointing out too, just the way that this organization has functioned, you know, apparently on a shoestring is a massive, massive story and a massive contributor to what we've seen from the Canucks and how disappointing they've been throughout this season.
I want one last piece of today's event. And if there's others you want to get to, by all means, jump in and let me know. But I think it was Woodley that asked about the future of the coaching staff. And Jim said, like, Travis is our guy. And we touched on it earlier. But it's not just Travis. Like, there are other members of that coaching staff. Like, the whole coaching staff need extensions here. Tomorrow night's the midway mark of the season. Like, the clock truly is ticking from tomorrow night on towards these guys having options that are beyond the club's control, right? Like, and so, I don't know. Like, I still think that it would just be a show of stability from the top down to get some deals done. And it's not just Travis Green, but it is his coaching staff as well. And so, the longer it goes, I think the louder this becomes a story over the second half of the season. Like, obviously, the trade deadline is there, and then beyond that, it's Pettersson and Hughes, but don't lose sight of the fact that these coaches, you know, on their own can choose to shop themselves as free agents when we get to the summertime. And so, like, every day closer to that, I think that's a bigger deal than maybe people have made in this market.
I think you're right all the way down. And, you know, I'm looking at the Canucks filter onto the ice to start practice, and I'm beginning to sort of live call it just out of a sense of nostalgia, JPEG.
I like it.
But what's disappointing to me as I reflect on that presser, like, what's most disappointing to me is that what the Canucks do next, right, in terms of executive leadership, in terms of coaches, in terms of what Pettersson and Hughes signed for, in terms of whether they get bridged or go long-term. What sucks the most about it is that I don't think it'll be based on-ice strategy, and I don't think it'll be based on job performance. I kind of think it'll be based on how quickly we get a vaccine rolled out and how quickly fans can get back in the stands. Like, I at the end of the day, I think that's going to be the most decisive influence on how this team conducts itself in the years ahead, or certainly in the weeks and months ahead. That puts the team at a massive disadvantage because other teams, other organizations, they're more focused on winning games right now. And I think the Canucks are a little bit more focused on, you know, the business side of it. Not that anyone's not focused on the business side. It's just that I think the business side is fundamentally, I think every dollar is being minded with a level of care and tight-fistedness that has, you know, made the priority of winning or protecting the brand or anything like that recede into the background to an extent greater, certainly than most of the teams in the North Division. I think that's a crummy place to be. I think that's just a crummy place to be for an organization, for all the players and people working within it, and for anyone who supports this team. You know, I really think that's a shame. And I do think fundamentally that's where we are and where we are. And that presser just sort of underlined it for me. Is just, not, you know, this overall sense of hopelessness. Because there's just no way you can be a right-thinking person, have listened to that presser, and come away thinking that better days are ahead for this franchise. They're not. They're not, at least not as it's currently constructed, not with its current leadership group. And we'll see what happens now. Going to be interesting.
Well, they go for back-to-back wins against the Leafs. They go for the sweep of this little mini-series. And, of course, they haven't strung back-to-back wins together since 3 in a row against Ottawa. And 1 in Winnipeg to wrap up January. So they didn't win consecutive games in the month of February when they went 2-9-2. They beat Winnipeg on Monday and then lost on Tuesday. So another opportunity. The Leafs will be rested after playing back-to-back. And Matthews and Marner I didn't think were particularly good on Thursday night, so you would expect that, and they probably see Freddie Anderson. It'll be a better Leafs team, and we'll see how things go for the Canucks, and then Montreal's in for a couple, and the homestand finishes against Edmonton. Vertanen, by the way, with his 2 goals, he's up to 3 on the season now, if people wonder about where he was in our high-stakes bet. You had him with 11 on the season, I had him with 10. It seems hard to believe that he will get to double digits, but there is still a second half, and maybe, just maybe, he is heating up. One thing before we go, and we referenced this last time in the comments section at the Athletic app, and I said that Jordan had name-dropped Jan Sove a couple of times, and I didn't understand why. Unfortunately, right. Jordan returned to the comments section to explain himself, and so I thought it was important to share that with the listeners here. Jordan wrote, "Jan Sove is very pleased by this announcement of 3 podcasts a week. The reason I started posting it was because Facebook showed me an old photo of Cassian dressed as a hot dog for Halloween while bowling with Jan Sove, who was dressed as a bottle of ketchup. And some and then in parentheses, some rando was mustard. He said, I just wanted to remind people that Jan Sove was in fact a thing very briefly, and now his ghost haunts the comment section. And then people started dropping all sorts of random old-time Canucks, Brandon Reed, there was a Chip Baroff reference in there, Jarkko Ruutu, there were a whole bunch. Anyways, people were having fun with it, but there you go, Tyler Bouk, there's a blast from the past. Anyways, we always say this at the end of every podcast that we do. Check out our comments section for every podcast episode at the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. If you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $3.99 a month. If you're looking for other pod options under the Athletic umbrella, we were talking about contracts and super agents. Jeff Jackson, the agent for Connor McDavid, is Craig Custance's guest this week on the Full 60, so you may want to look into that over the weekend. And Tom, quite a day for the Vancouver Canucks. I think we covered it top to tail there. And where it goes from here for the Vancouver Canucks, apparently it's just day to day, or day by day, right? Elias Pettersson is day to day, but in the words of the general manager, when he was asked if he really believed that this was a playoff team, he said they're just taking it day by day. And we'll see what that means when they face the Leafs for a second time here on Saturday night.
Oh, day by day. Day by day and run out of time. It's impossible not to link those together and just sort of wonder what's next. But whatever's next, it doesn't seem like it's going to be the result of something proactive. It doesn't seem like it's going to be something that is, you know, planned, calculated, or that's going to help this team win. It's a disappointing day. I think it's got to be... Today's got to be disappointing for anyone who cares about the future of this hockey club and wants to see them win games. And that's really too bad. Like, that is fundamentally too bad. But let's leave it there, J-Pat. Lots of fun.
Nope, we're not quite ready to leave it. I want to leave it with some good news. And that was just thanks to everybody for the great reaction to our announcement the other day that we're going 3 a week. And this is the first week that we've done 3 officially. We did some in the bubble, obviously, when the stakes were super high in the playoffs. But the announcement the other day that we're now going 3 times a week. And again, it's not a set schedule. We'll sort of work around the Canucks schedule and try to avoid game days where possible. But 3 in a week is going to be difficult to avoid game days all the time. But it seemed well received. And so, again, there's a hunger in the market for some real Canuck talk. And I think that's what we provide here at the VanCast. At least that's what we try to do. So thanks to everybody that reached out when we made the announcement, either here on the pod or online the other day.
Yep. Thank you. And we're so excited. We're so excited to step up the VanCast into 3 a week, 3 episodes a week. It really a reflection of the incredible support we've had in this market. And, you know, what a great way to celebrate, right? our first ever 3 week episode, non-playoff edition, than with a Jim Benning Presser Reacts podcast. That's as good as it gets, J-Pat.
It is indeed. Hey, for your answer, it's J-Pat. Thanks so much. Have yourself a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back with 3 new VanCasts for you next week here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.
We're day-to-day on the VanCast.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.